Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, March 14th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this show, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts. Give this show a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation for this podcast to the next level, I need you to go to patreon.com/mundanefestival and subscribe to the show. It's $3 a month with hours and hours and hours of podcast gems and things of that nature. I want to give a special shout out to Damon, who signed up last week. Thank you so much, Damon, for subscribing. Really appreciate you. I hope you're enjoying the tons of hours of podcasting jewels over there. This is episode 492. What are we going to do on 492? You know, we have fun on 491. I have a super special return guest, comedian Ken Krantz. He's got a brand new podcast called the I Love Rock and Roll podcast that he's doing with Chip Chantry. So check that out. Wherever you listen to podcasts, they're on Spotify right now and on some other, wherever you listen to podcasts, just fucking listen to it, okay? Don't, just, you know, all right. Before we get to that conversation, I want to say a couple things. Hope everybody had a good week. I had a pretty good week. I had a good week doing TPS reports and got some props and felt good. My self-esteem was pretty high. Confidence levels are high. I got an audition that I got to do at some point, that I got to send in. That's always exciting to show your craft to the world and to you know, the possibility of things to come. So that's always good to do. One thing that I want to talk about. One thing that I don't want to, this wouldn't be my podcast if I didn't tell you that Cam Newton, or remind you that Cam Newton got a job. He re-signed to the Patriots for 14 mil. He's still in the league. Shout out to the Firestarter crew. Happy about that. I hope he has a team around him. I hope he has a line to block and some receivers to throw to. And I hope the defense can handle their end of the bargain, and that they become a playoff team in the AFC East. I hope that happens. I'm wishing good things for him, and that little kid can go to hell that tried to shit on his skills and ability and everything that he's accomplished. Fuck that kid still. Hope he achieves everything that he dreams of. I really do. I want him, because I don't want to shit on a kid. I don't like his, what does Brutus say to Cassius and Julius Caesar? Cassius says, Brutus doesn't love me, and or something like that. And he says, I still love you. I do not like your faults. I don't know the exact phrasing, but that was, I heard those lines over and over again for 4 months on the Navy Pier when I was an ensemble member at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. I was but a boy, a young man, really, of 20. I'm black, so I was a man at that point. I was 23, so I was definitely a fucking man. All the white guys my age were boys. but that was fun. But I just remember, like, I just do not like your faults. But other than that, I still love you. Who's going to really shit on a black kid's dreams? If you haven't already, you can check me out on the Three Guys On podcast on episode 1000. So go over to Three Guys On, check me out there. So another thing that I wanted to say, something just really made me angry. And I try not to I try to be positive with this show. And we talk about everything on the show. I've been doing this show for 8 years. I needed to talk about that. I've been doing this show for 8 years. And it's been a journey, I would say. I definitely am not doing this for the money. It would be nice to get some advertisement and more Patreon subscribers, but I love doing this show because I like talking to people, and I have a degree. I'm in debt for having a communications degree, broadcasting degree. So I dig doing this, and I love the stories that I get to hear from the very talented people, very interesting and talented people that have graced this show. And I'm going to try to keep doing it for as long as I can. But it seems like I've just been seeing a lot of like white comedians. This has been happening. This has just kind of been bubbling up for a while. And you've heard me talk about this like within the last 5 to 7 years. And I know you hear me throw that phrase out, but that's within the last 5 to 7 years. And before Trump, it just seems like every time black people start getting stuff, people just kind of they get jealous, or they think, where's my opportunities? How come I'm not this? And I've been saying, maybe you're not that good. And I'm seeing people that are not that good that happen. They are white. They are not that good. And they continue to just really just get a lot of love. But I think that's in the podcasting community. And I think that's just a microcosm of America anyway. But I'm seeing people like they have like these stunt guests that just really get people to listen, like these people who are known racists, and they get them on their podcast, and it's just like, what the fuck are you doing? And you look at their, I'm not pocket watching, but when people tell you about how much they make, and you have your friends, and this motherfucker makes this amount of money, and you go to that Patreon, and you're like, oh my God. Like, you just like, wow. It's amazing. But I don't want to get it like that. And I'm not saying I'm righteous with my shit. I'm not perfect. I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. Put my heart and soul to this, y'all. Hope you feel me. From wherever I am to wherever you are. Mean that sincerely. Shit. You know what I'm saying? That's how I try to come at it, man. I ain't perfect. But goddamn the way they getting it. But I don't want to get it like that. And I see that these people that are like, they grew up with a couple black people, or they, you know, are immersed themselves in the black culture and they swagger jack black people. They're culture vultures or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And them motherfuckers is eating. And then they want to shit on black people. Like, yo, if you have a known racist on your podcast and you're white, you can't wear fucking Jordans. You can't wear Urban apparel. Don't wear any athletic apparel that black basketball players wear. You can talk about, you can say, well, don't wear, you could be a asshole and say, well, don't wear our clothes. Black people were stripped of our culture from West Africa and all over that continent and brought over here. And we were westernized, and we made a culture from ground up, from ground zero, from nothing. That's the biggest export that this country has, our style and our culture, the way we walk, the way we talk, the way we sing, the way we dance. It's a fucking commodity that everybody all over this world uses and steals. You don't do that shit no more. Just be white. Just be white, young, because it works. To me, that's worse than like, just be white because it works. And you guys get black women for doing that shit too. I see it on Instagram every day. I see like this, a beautiful actress or beautiful black actress model, just with the fucking white guy all the time. You love, be who you want to be, love who you want to love. But I see it. You can, and I see the type of dudes they are. You can just be white. You don't have to take our style, our culture, the sneakers that we made popular. You don't have to do that shit. Just be white. Don't do it. I joked on Twitter. Like, as somebody that, like, you know, that I respected, he got dunked on. He got his ass beat on Twitter. But it's like, you see people that just kind of like, oh, that I used to respect, man. Like, I see these people, I'm like, damn, man. Like, okay, that guy's a good comic. Okay, you know, he likes sneakers. Like, you can't be tweeting about black people buying sneakers when you buy and getting their stimulus check and buying sneakers with this shit. I know I joke about that shit, but it's like, I'm black. You ain't. And it's like, really? When you do the same shit, when you own it more than me, when you more of a sneakerhead than me and some of my other, it's just like, yo, what are these people doing? And it's like, I was talking to one of my friends about it, and he was just like, with COVID happening, it's like podcasting is all some people have, and they're really going hard at this clout chasing shit that's turning them into coons. They are white coons. They are coons and clowns. And I see it, man. I've been seeing that shit happen for years. And you see people just have this evolution. And I'm not saying like I want to have this racist on my podcast so I could talk shit about him. I told you what happened a couple months ago where that dude reached out to me and all the black people he had on his show was like talking down about black people. I'm not going to do that shit. I'll joke and everything like that. And I am who I am. But like I said, I ain't perfect, but I don't want to get it. I don't want to get it like you getting it. I don't want to eat like you, but I see it. We see you. My homies see you, and you are a clown. You guys are clowns. You're coons. I don't even like to call black people coons for real. Like, not like that, but these white boys, y'all coons, man. Don't wear Jordans. If you're going to talk about Chicago as a substitute for black people, don't wear Nikes. Don't wear any athletic apparel. Don't wear no baseball hat to match your fucking shoes or your shirt. Don't do it no more. I'm not trying to fight nobody, but I'm just saying you're inauthentic. You're not real. And part of being a great comedian is being real to some extent. Everybody has their act, and you have your whatever you do, your persona when you're on stage. But for the most part, hey, we're just going for that authentic shit, man. And it's people like even taking me out of the equation. I see this all the time. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, and I don't think I'll ever get tired of it. You take me out of the equation. You take this podcast out of the equation. You're not as good as my friends who are black. You're not. You don't even really deserve to be on the same stage with them. You're not that good. You're a flash in the pan. And yeah, you might be getting it. You might be getting that bread, like just all the carbs you getting, but you're not that good. You're not. And I don't think you'll ever be. But just to see this, like, I really feel like I had to say something about it, because it's just like, it's annoying. And the people that tweet that bullshit, they get dunked on by people on Twitter. But I'm not really into all that shit. Maybe that's why I don't have a lot of Twitter followers. Maybe that's why the podcast isn't as popular as some. But I appreciate everybody that subscribes to this shit. And like I just said, like, I don't need that clout chasing bullshit. Like, you're going to talk shit about black people while you wearing Jordans. And you talk about this shit like, oh, the third world country people that make the shoe. But you know what the fuck I'm talking about. You wearing Jordans and you trying to talk like rappers and shit. And that hip hop shit is, man, let me just, you guys get what I'm saying. And a lot of times when I talk like this on the podcast, for the most part, I'm preaching to the choir. And I think most people that listen to this show are halfway decent people. And that's my audience. That's who my audience is, the couple hundred of people that listen to this shit. But we don't do that over here, man. We don't need to do that over here. And I'm just going to say on my podcast, you're not as good as my friends, and you'll never be, because you don't have our style. You don't have our culture. You may be white, but it ain't always right because you're white. Damn, I sound a little bit like Paul Mooney. Just all right. Let's get to Ken. Let's get to Ken Krantz, my Jewish guest. Ken is a very funny comic, and I've known Ken for a few years. Like doing shows in Jersey and doing shows in the city. Very funny dude, and he wanted to come on and reached out to me to promote his podcast, I Love Rock and Roll, that he's doing with Chip Chantry. And we had a good time talking. We just kind of comics just shooting the shit. And I mentioned this podcast, you know, it's about you come on to the show and you talk about one specific artist and you break down their career, talk about their discography and whatnot. And Darren Patterson, a friend of the podcast, is going to be on the show, on their show, to talk about De La Soul at some point. And I mentioned in the show that I think Darren had worked at Tower Records, but I don't think he worked at Tower Records. I think he worked at Virgin Megastore. And Darren, if you listen to this, you can tweet and say that. Tell me what store that you worked at. The last time he was on the show was like 3 or 4 years ago, so I don't remember exactly. But I know that he is very knowledgeable about music. And he did work at a music store at some point in his young life. So without further ado, yeah, you know, I would feel remiss if I didn't bring that up about the things that I said about white people stealing our culture and pretending to ingratiate themselves with our culture. And then shitting on black people and having racist people on their shows. And we're seeing your true colors shine through. So I want to get you to Ken. This is a fun conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. I got to give you a little bit of shit, man, because you were like, oh, can we reschedule? I'm like, sure. And you're like, yeah, I booked something, and I forgot my daughter's birthday. And then I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. And then minutes later, I'm on Facebook and you're just, oh my God, I want to say happy birthday to my daughter. It was so funny.
You know what's, well, we were always scheduled for tonight, weren't we?
We were, but you pushed it. You wanted to push it up, which was no problem. But it was just funny the way you were texting me. And I was like, okay, yeah, no worries. And then I see your adorable daughter, you wishing your happy birthday to your kid. And you're just, it's almost like you were kind of scrambling. That's what it felt like.
What happened was, so I booked a bunch of these, shows to promote the new podcast, and mm-hmm. somebody reached out to book me, and I thought it was for 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. but it was for 5 o'clock Pacific time.
Oh, okay.
So it was 8 o'clock here. And then I remember you telling me that you were like totally flexible. And then I looked at their thing and they already had me on their promo for 8 o'clock. But I did book Kate Wolf's podcast for yesterday, completely forgetting it was my daughter's birthday.
Oh, shit.
So on Sunday, I had to text her like, oh, my God, Kate, I have to reschedule. I forgot it's my kid's birthday.
How old is she? 5, 4?
She just turned 5.
So what did you get her?
Oh man, we got her, took her to Build-A-Bear yesterday for her first trip to the mall since the pandemic started.
Wow.
I got her like some robot dog thing that it looks like a balloon animal dog. And like if you tell it to sit, it sits, and it'll come here if you tell it to come here, and it lays down and it makes noises, and she loves it.
How soon are you and your wife going to get tired of that thing?
I'm already tired of it.
I can imagine. I can imagine.
Like within a minute of the batteries going in, I was like, this was a big mistake.
That always sounds like a bit already. So how has it been for her being such a young kid and needing, like, a kid like that should be around her friends? Obviously, because of the pandemic, it's hard. But
right.
Is she doing any? Is she pre-K or what is she?
She's now? Pre-K. Uh-huh. She's pre-K, and so she just turned five. So she was like four when the pandemic started. You know, mm-hmm. She just turned four, and for a four-year-old, all of a sudden to wake up and, like, you don't have to go to daycare anymore. And mommy and daddy are home all day, every day. Like, for her, it was like, if it was up to her, the pandemic wouldn't end. You know, like she started living her best life in the pandemic. And we're lucky in that a lot of our neighbors have little kids. Uh-huh. So all her friends live on our street. And, you know, she was still outside playing. So she still had plenty of socialization.
That's good.
But where she's back, she's been back in pre-K for months now.
Okay. Where in Jersey are you now?
Asbury Park.
So I'm in Hackensack. So that's like 50 miles. So you're about an hour away from, mm-hmm. from me. And you used to be in like the New Brunswick area, right?
Right.
What's that change been like? It's been almost a year for you now, right?
It's been closer to 2 years.
Oh, wow. Two. Okay. Okay.
It's going from going from a college town in your 40s to live at the beach. It's much better.
You are living the life, man.
You know, what's funny is when I used to live in New Brunswick, I lived 5 minutes from the Stress Factory.
Yes.
Which is the best club in the state. Mm-hmm. And when I moved, like, a lot of my comedian friends were like, why are you moving? Like, you're going to be so far away from the club. Like, I would get the last minute phone calls all the time. You know, if they had a 7:30 show and Vinny didn't show up, I'd get a call at 7:15. Like, can you hurry down here and work?
Yeah.
But I love how comedian friends think that's a reason to stay in a town with your family for the rest of your life. Like, why am I leaving a shitty two-bedroom apartment to go live in a house at the beach? Really?
You're upgrading your life. Yeah.
I'll be okay making a longer drive to the club.
Right.
So, and it's no contest.
How far is that? From the club, from
it's like a 40-minute drive now.
That's not bad. That's
not bad at all.
No. I did that room, that club, Jenks. That I did. Who's the gentleman? That is it?
Ryan Marr.
Ryan Marr had that room, and I guess I did that in 2019, and I took that drive down there. I want to say it was early spring or summer. It's fucking beautiful down there.
It's beautiful.
Every time I have, are you born and raised in Jersey?
Yes.
I've been here for almost 14 years, and people are fucking missing out, dude. Jersey gets such a bad rap.
But it's sort of like, I kind of like that it gets a bad rap because we're overcrowded as it is. Mm-hmm. And I think it gets a bad rap because you fly in the Newark, you know, like that's your first impression of the state.
but you're not even in Newark proper, really. You're at the airport.
Right.
You just hop on the turnpike.
It's such a disgusting airport, and the turnpike's all. Yes.
I don't remember it being.
It's gross.
It was the last time I flew out of there was like 2018. I don't remember it being bad.
It's gross. I mean, I know that they renovated it, but it's gross. And then when you fly into other airport, like you fly into the Denver airport, and it's like you can literally eat food off the floor because it's immaculate and people are like playing hacky sack and there's bands and it's like, oh, this is way nicer. I mean, maybe not the hippie thing, but
but it's like what they're doing. They're doing to, like, I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago in Hackensack up here, because this is basically a commuter town, even though they call it a city, it's still the burbs. And they have all these buildings that they're gutting and they're putting stuff up. I just wonder who's going to live there. Who's going to live in all these places? Is it because people are getting priced out of the city and Queens and Brooklyn?
Probably, but I think it's also, I think the pandemic has scared a lot of people out of Queens and the city and Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people are looking for things in Jersey that they can still get to the city quickly, but you don't have to be in the city. I heard something about Hackensack. A friend of mine who lives, I guess he lives near there, just sent me an article. I don't know how recent it was, but they were redoing all of downtown Hackensack. Yes. I see you.
They're trying to call it the like sack.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? Like, just don't do that. It's like, they're doing the same thing that they did to my first experience of that was living in Chicago. What is the name of that project? Oh my God, I'm so out of it. Well, I'm trying to. Oh my God, Keanu Reeves did this movie called Hardball, where he was coaching these kids, and it was on like quote unquote Cabrini Green. Mm-hmm. It was Cabrini Green was a project in Chicago, and I used to work at a. So I don't know how old that Best Buy was when I worked there, but it was like there was a Best Buy and a Whole Foods. So, you know, if there's a Whole Foods around, things are getting gentrified.
Right.
And before I left in 2007, there was a Barnes & Noble at the bus stop and things were building up and they're doing the same thing. And it's just like, just you can do the renovations. The sack is just, come on.
The thing is, that got passed a committee. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's not like it wasn't like one dude was like, we're going to call this the sack and it'll be so.
Yeah.
Like, they had several meetings on what to call it. And I'm dying to know, like, what names got rejected.
Yeah,
but they probably know that the sack is like, what? We're not calling it the tit. Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, it's like when I did our mutual friend Ritu Chandra's show that she had in Morristown. And I was like, I remember closing that show out a couple years ago. And I was like, all right, it's great to be here in Morristown. And then somebody said Motown. And I was like, no, there's only one Motown. You're not. And it's not here. And
yes.
I shitted on them for like 5 minutes before I started my set. But it's like, it's, yeah, dude, like, I don't fucking get that shit. Because they're building up, and I could tell because there's a laundromat near me that I went in there. I hadn't been there in months, and they renovate. It looked like a fucking George Jetson laundromat. I was just like, okay, things are changing. Shit's changing here. I just hope I don't get priced out. My landlord told me, you got to move. You got to get out of here. So
if the laundromat's starting to look like the Jetsons, I feel like you don't have too much longer.
I know. I got to get a sitcom. I got to book some acting work to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. How hard is that now?
I've been getting a lot of auditions and coming close to stuff, but I think it's in due time, things will start to pick up a little more, but I've been getting some good auditions. I've just been putting them on tape and stuff, which is actually a lot better than driving all the way into the city to fucking Wall Street area and having it. I hate it, dude.
I've heard a lot of people saying that. I don't have I'm not super interested in acting. Uh-huh. I feel like I get enough rejection through stand up. You know, like to combine the two seems weird.
But you work a lot, though, dude. You working a lot, man.
I I'm lucky that there's a couple clubs that throw me a lot of work, and then there's a few comics who there's a few comics who use me to open. So I'm lucky, you know, like if they work, I get work.
But you weren't, didn't seem to be scared at all.
I was super, you're talking about during the shutdown. I went from March, I think, until July without performing once.
Okay.
And then started doing some of the outdoor shows. And then I'm lucky, you know, Stress Factory stayed in business. They put up a giant tent with heaters and it feels like an indoor show, you know, and you can do shows for 150 people who are safe and socially distanced. Okay. So I didn't take anything indoors until pretty recently. Mm-hmm. But I've just been super careful, you know, I've had people in my family who are like, I can't believe you're still going to shows. And it's like, well, you go to the supermarket. Like once you leave the house, all bets are off.
Yeah.
So you just be careful. You know, I'd go to the indoor shows. I'll sit at my table with my mask on the entire time. I won't shake hands. I won't take pictures.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I'm not the kind of comic that people are clamoring for pictures afterwards. You know, unless somebody wants to throw something up on Facebook, like this is me and some guy that just bombed worse than I knew was even possible.
Yeah, I'm just fearful, man. And I know you got vaccinated not too long ago, right?
Yes. Yeah. Ritu took care of us.
Yeah, Ritu was instrumental. And I was going to get, I got my first one on Friday of last week. And it just so happened that the time that she got me an appointment, I got one from from someone that I knew, and it was closer. It was just in the Meadowlands. So the one Ritu got was in Edison. So I just said, you know, I'll just go to the Meadowlands. So when I have to get my second one, I won't have to go as far. You know, it was just like down the street from me, like 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to drive up to Hackettstown, which was like an hour and a half from me.
Oh, wow.
And for the second shot was during one of the snowstorms we just had.
And did they reschedule?
No. I thought for sure they would, but they text me the night before and that morning, like, your appointment's on and you need to come in.
Oh, shit.
It took me close to, it was like a 2.5 hour drive to get the second one.
Oh, wow.
Man. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to. And then at one point, wherever I was up in North Jersey, I think it was like Route 46, like the highway was closed for.
Yeah.
Like and they detoured you. Through it was all back roads, so my final like half an hour to the vaccination spot was in a blizzard, and everything was down winding mountain roads.
Jesus.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna die trying to not die. Like,
yeah, that's crazy that they didn't reschedule. And your wife already had it because she's in the healthcare.
Yeah, she got it. She got it through the hospital she works for.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, dude, it's that's amazing that they kept it open. A lot of places up here, they just shut it down. I think in the city they shut everything down and then they rescheduled everybody. And I think they're lifting. I was told that they're lifting restrictions or raising the age up to like maybe like 44 to 65 or something like that. You know, I was trying to get some of my New Jersey friends appointments and stuff. So like just being like the intermediary and trying to get people stuff. Because when I went, there were all ages were there.
Yeah.
I was surprised, like, no, there were hardly any black people there, which kind of made me sad. There were black people working there and volunteering. So I'm assuming they got their stuff, obviously. But I didn't see any, like, I saw like a, I saw an Indian couple that was a middle-aged couple. And I saw, God, who else did I see? I saw maybe a couple Hispanic people, but not that, no minorities really.
They're saying that it's been hard to convince a lot of minorities to get the vaccine.
Yeah. I know about, like, I know, like, some of my friends are like, oh, fuck, you know, I don't know about that shit. But I'm like, dude, I eat at McDonald's. So, so I mean, you can you know, like, it's, I go, like, I, like, when Chris Rock said it best, he was like, you take Tylenol, don't you? He's like, yeah, I don't know what's in that, you know?
Yeah.
I take that. So, yes. I think, go ahead.
I have friends who still do cocaine that won't get the vaccine. It's, I'm like, I've literally seen you snort coke off of a toilet seat, but you won't get like the vaccine. Like, you're too good for that.
Yeah. That's crazy, dude.
It's insane.
Yeah. Cause that, I was talking to my parents about it today and I was just saying how, you know, it bummed me out that I didn't see any black people or very little people of color. And that's to me, that goes part and parcel with wearing your mask. You know, it's like you wear the mask and you get the vaccine when you can. That's a part of our duty, you know, in these troubling times. Like, that's what we should be
in these uncertain times.
In these uncertain times, we should be doing that shit, man. You know, so. But then at the same time, like I said, in, you know, on the episodes that's up this week, I was just saying, you know, it's easy to talk shit about government and all this negative shit and all the bullshit people talk about on Twitter. It was very inspiring, heartwarming, if you will, to see all those people helping, you know, and making things go right at the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
We're going to really see people on ground zero. Like, I don't know if that's ground zero, but just helping out. So we can get back to telling our dick jokes.
have you been performing at all?
No, it's been over a year. My last time I performed was February 15th. I did a run at the Borgata and then I did a one nighter in Waretown, New Jersey, mm-hmm. which is like four. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
Really cool little bar in the middle. It's just like the middle of fucking nowhere. It's a bar, and then like you go in this back room and it's a huge fucking warehouse and they had a stage there. It was great. So that was the last time I was asked to perform. But I was like, I'll at least wait till I get the second one and then just, you know, kind of weigh my options and see what's happening, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
I remember sitting backstage at Governor's last March 15th. I'm in the green room with Jessica Kirsten, and we were like, had the news on, and it was that weekend where every club everywhere shut down, except for Long Island. And I remember us watching the news and being like, this is probably going to shut shit down for a month or two. We were like,
yeah.
We might not be performing again until May. Like, when I went out there that night with a very real feeling of like, this might be it for a while.
Right.
And you know, Jessica's, she's a local Long Island comic. And every time I've worked with her there, that place is packed the fuck out for her. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, 2/3 of people in the early show didn't show. And the late show was maybe only like people were scared. Like everybody was staying home.
Yeah.
In a million years, you know, I wasn't like, oh, well, we'll still probably be here in a year, you know?
Yeah. I was not expecting that. Tom Hanks was the first celebrity that I knew of, Tom Hanks had gotten it. And then the NBA shut down. And we were just finishing. We were maybe in our last. We were like our third or fourth preview of this play that I was working on, and I was like, "Oh shit!" And then so the next day, I go into the city. I get a fucking ticket, a traffic ticket, that I still have to pay for that. I sent the check in, but they kept raising the price. It's just a lot of bullshit. And I had an audition in the Wall Street area. I go to park my car in the garage in Midtown, and I walk over to go to the movies because I'm in the city early. So I go see fucking that Vin Diesel movie, Bloodshot. That was the last movie I saw.
That's the last movie you saw in the theater?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Would you have done it if you knew, like, oh, this might be it forever?
I didn't think of that. I just, I thought, like, you know what it was? I think it was an AMC. It was a certain type of IMAX that they have. I can't even remember now. It's been so long. But I was like, okay, cool. I haven't been to an AMC with this, because I'm a nerd about that stuff. My favorite movie theater, as far as the AMCs are concerned, is the Dolby Theater, because it's got the great, great sound, great seats. This picture's great. And it's like, it's fucking awesome. And those tickets are kind of run you about like $20, but I'm in that fucking club that they have. Anyway, so I paid for my ticket. And as I'm walking in, I get at the concession stand, I look at my phone and I see that Broadway's been shut down. So I was like, fuck. And I was like, well, I might as well watch this fucking movie since I got these snacks already. So I was kind of like, fuck. And then after that, it was just like everything was gone. And then it took my job a couple weeks to shut shit down. And we were working from home until July. And then now we're going alternating like one. I go in on Thursday of this week. And then next week I go in twice. So we're at like 25%. So I think that'll last a few more months, maybe until like summertime.
Yeah. It's crazy how no one just has a handle on everyone's just guessing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it seems like things are getting a little more positive. Like, you know, they say like people that have got the vaccine, you can be indoors with other people that have the vaccine. You know, they said that most people will have had both vaccines by the end of May. Do you think, is there any legitimacy to stand up coming back, clubs opening on April 2nd in the city? Is that a real thing?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think so. They're going to be at limited capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine how how's the seller going to come back? Like, what's 35% of people? And it's not even just 35% of however many people it fits. It's 35% that have to be socially distant.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if you're like, well, the cellar probably fits, what, 100 people? So even if you're like, well, that's 35, but it's like not even really 35 people, because you can't, you can't put them all 6 feet apart. So I don't know how some of the smaller clubs are going to, you know, some of the bigger showrooms like Gotham, I'm sure will be okay.
Yeah.
Some of those smaller clubs, I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess like the seller has that fat black, not fat black. Fat Black Pussycat's the big room, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like the places where it's best to do comedy is where COVID thrives. And
yes.
And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's just not over yet. Like, even though there's light at the end of the tunnel, it's just not over yet, dude.
No, even fully vaccinated now, if I was offered a spot indoors in the city, I don't know if I'm there yet. I don't know how comfortable I am yet.
I don't feel comfortable yet either. I almost think maybe summertime, if they were still doing outdoor shows, I would probably take a stab at an outdoor show.
So I'm so curious now, like, do you, because I've talked with other comics who haven't performed at all through this. Do you still feel like a comic? Like, do you still think like a comic?
All the time. I don't think it. Once you put in the time, what are you at, like 11, 12 years?
11, 12 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's we started around the same time. And it's like it never really turns off. It's like when you were talking about your daughter's toy, I was like, yeah, I bet you that's a bit, Yeah, that's a bit already, dude. Yeah, you can do something with that. Like, you constantly think about that, and it just becomes a part of you. And I don't think it goes away unless you just kind of exercise it in some way, like, you know, extract it from you.
Right.
But it's like, I was listening to Eddie Murphy on Marin this week. And one good thing about Marin is, like, he was just saying, like, I just approached it as talking to another comic. You know, Eddie's an icon. So it's just kind of like, well, how do I kind of get in, like, open him up a little bit? And as soon as they started talking about stand up, it was like, oh, yeah, I work this club with this guy and this guy. And then he just opened up. And Eddie's not a super, I mean, he's not like closed off, but it just became a really great conversation. Probably one of the best I've heard, like, best interviews, like, long form that I've heard.
How excited are you for his return to stand up?
I think it's going to be great. And I don't think it's going to be the acerbic stuff that he used to do, because
right.
It's a guy that's going to be 60 years old in a month. And, I think he's still going to be hilarious. I just think it's going to be different. And it's just like the people that, like, I saw Coming to America, the sequel, and I was just like, okay, it was all right. But it made me feel good to see all those actors, all those, like, black artists that I grew up watching on screen together. And I felt good to see Jermaine Fowler there, because he's from the area. Mm-hmm. He grew up in Maryland, and, you know, he's a New York comic. And, you know, I think people just kind of put too much on stuff like that.
I'm excited, though. Like, I agree with you. And I don't think it'll be anything like, you know, when he was in his early 20s, but it would be weird if it was. I want to hear his take on being older now. Like, I want to hear all that.
Yeah.
I don't need him to try and reproduce Delirious or Raw, because
right.
If you haven't evolved past that point, you know, it'd be weird. It'd be weird.
It would be. Yeah. I'm excited to see what he's gonna do when stuff comes back. Go ahead. You said you were gonna say something else?
No.
Oh, okay. So what's going on? Let's talk about Why Bother before we get into your new show. Sure. What's going on? You were off for a while. One of my favorite podcasts, Why Bother, you and Ritu have such a great chemistry together that it was just very, it was, I'd say it's like a warm blanket, you know, like, it was just like, and I think I told you guys this, the first time I listened, you guys have been going for like two or three episodes. Maybe you had two out, and I was stuck in that snowstorm of, what was that? Was that like, when did you guys start? Was that 2017?
We started in 20 or in 2020. I want to say we started in like 2018 or 2019. We got just about 100 episodes.
Yeah. Whenever that big snowstorm that came out of nowhere, that had to be November of 2018, 2019. I don't know. Whenever it was, I'd have to look back. But I was stuck in traffic, and I was like, Ritu and Ken are good together.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a good show. Like, it's a good show. Like, you guys shit on each other. You're not racist. You're a little racist sometimes towards your own people.
Yes.
But it's not alt-right. It doesn't lean towards the alt-right. And,
you know, it was a weird, it's a weird place to be in, because I feel like that alt-right crowd are the ones who probably would like it the most.
You think so?
But, well, just because it was super raw and unfiltered, and there was no pandering, and, you know, there was it just wasn't politically correct. And so you would get like a lot of the people that liked it weren't necessarily the people you were hoping would like it, you know?
Like, so like who? Like, would it be like parents or like what?
No, just like a lot of that. We get a lot of love from Trump supporters and the alt-right crowd, you know, who assume that you think like they do because, you know, maybe your jokes aren't, like I said, they're not politically correct. So.
But you got a shadow on Trump, though.
We did, yeah, as we got, yeah. So,
okay, well, yeah, you can't, sometimes you can't help who follows you or who likes you, but yeah, that is kind of weird because you're a Jewish guy and she's a South Asian woman.
Yes.
So that's okay. I don't know.
It was a fun podcast.
Yeah.
I am the first to admit I'm not the easiest person to work with. So
why do you think that is?
Because I don't like doing a lot of the work that goes into this stuff, you know, and I have no technical, like I'm borderline mentally challenged when it comes to computers and technical stuff. Uh-huh. And so I think there was a constant tension behind the scenes of like Ritu was doing the bulk of the work. And I just wanted to kind of like, I want him to be like Forrest Whitaker in Fast Times, you know, like I just wanted the fly in for the games. I just wanted to come in, do the podcast and then not think about it again. Sure. So I wasn't the easiest person to work with. So we went on hiatus for a while during COVID.
Right, right.
We ran out of shit to talk about, you know, especially after 3 or 4 months inside. Mm-hmm. It was like, well, what'd you do this weekend? Well, the same thing I've done the last 15 weekends in a row.
Yeah.
You know, like nothing. There's nothing to talk about. So we would talk about Trump and what was going on in the news, and that became the bulk of what we were doing, and neither one of us even wanted to be doing that, you know.
Yeah.
So we came back after a little hiatus, and I think after a few episodes we sort of agreed that maybe it'd run its course.
It was good. I mean, I liked it, but I kind of don't count because I'm one of your peers. And then, you know, but it was I did listen to, I think I listened to every episode.
Yeah,
I think I did. Yeah. So,
yeah, it was I love Ritu.
Yeah,
I have nothing bad to say about her, but I think it just ran its course.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys will do your show when it comes back.
I would imagine in Gotham, at Gotham.
Yeah, the Gotham.
Yeah, show. But you know, like I'm sort of anticipating like Gotham's got that big showroom, but that lounge where our show is.
Yeah.
That's literally a basement lounge. Like, there's no way. I'll be shocked if it's even open initially.
Yeah, that was my favorite place in the city to perform. That place, because it would be, especially when it was late at night, like the, oh my God. And Dan Enfield used to run a show.
Yes. Yeah, every Saturday night.
Yeah, that was like, that was the shit.
Always packed. When that place was packed. If I would rather perform for 50 people in the lounge down there than 100 people in the showroom.
Yeah.
Because when that place was packed with its low ceilings, it was like it rocked with laughter. The laughs bounced off the wall. It was like you could feel it in the air.
It's like you could always, you could kill down there. But at the same time, even in a packed room, I felt like I could experiment down there.
Yes.
You know, it was all like, it's just like, okay, fuck it. You got, and then I would just always bail myself out by it's 12:30 in the morning on Sunday. Get over yourselves. fucking get over yourselves, okay? It's just, you know, like that. I love that room. I love the main floor, the main showroom, but it is a different, it's a different beast up there.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's kind of like that. It's not like, have you ever played James DiBenedetto's room at, in the metal and, what do you call that room? The Italian restaurant.
Oh, Paisanos. Yes.
Paisanos.
Love that room.
I love that room, but it's like, you kind of have to be, it's like everything is just so like, what is it? It's like you got, it's so wide there.
Yes.
And you not only have the people in front of you, you got the people like far left, far stage left, far stage yes. right. You got to make sure that they're all, but it's a great, I love that space. And that's another place, people on top of each other.
Yes.
It's like, fuck, man.
Yeah, I don't know when, and I, you know, it's great. It's a baby step in the right direction, opening some of these indoor clubs at limited mm-hmm. capacity, but it just, it's, I think good stand-up, you're meant to be packed in on top of each other and
yeah.
in a tiny room with low ceilings. And it's great that it's coming back somewhat, but I don't think it'll be, I don't think it'll be what we all remember until we're full capacity.
Yeah. Cause and that's why I feel like I can wait until it comes back mm-hmm. the right way. And like, I feel like I've been writing stuff. I've been like, if I get an idea, I write it down. So that's a good idea. That's a good premise. And then there's stuff that I still want to develop and, you know, so I think it'll be rough starting back up, but I think it won't, the rust period won't be too bad for me, I don't think.
You know what I found, I mean, I know if you talk to every comic's different, but what I found for me personally was I took a 4 month, I was 4 months without performing. Mm-hmm. Which was the longest I'd ever gotten since I started. You know, since yeah. I started, I never went more than 3 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought once I get up there and get my first couple laughs, it'll be like muscle memory. It'll be like autopilot. You'll just
yeah.
fall back into it and remember what to do. And that was not the case. It was not even close to the case.
Yeah.
It took even... I'd say it took me probably close to 10 or 12 shows before I even felt comfortable again.
Yeah.
And I was, I'm not to say that I was having terrible sets or bombing, like I was doing fine, but I felt like I didn't know what I was doing up there, you know?
Yeah. Like your rhythm, like your internal.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel you. Yeah.
I would start a joke and not remember how it went.
Oh God.
You know, and like, you know, yeah. how you're up on stage and you're two or three moves ahead. Like, well, I'll hit them with this next and then segue yeah. into that. And then I couldn't even do that because I'd be like, all right, well, I'll do this next. And then I would start thinking, wait, how does that joke go again?
Mm-hmm.
And then while I was trying to, and then I would already be doing it before I'd even figured it out in my head, you know, like how it went or what to do. So it I'm sure it's different for everybody. It took me a while before I felt fully confident and comfortable.
No, I get it, dude. I understand. Like if you take a little bit of time off, it's like, oh my God, getting your sea legs. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Before we get into what your new pod's about, we got a few minutes to chat. Yeah. What have you been watching? And I know before you went, Why Bothered ended, you guys actually had a pretty good breakdown on Allen versus Pharaoh, and you guys broke down that first episode. Are you continuing with that?
Yes. Yeah. I just finished watching it today. It is so, it has everything for me because I'm such a huge Woody Allen fan.
Okay.
And I love, you know, pedophilia. So I feel like it's got
the darkness of Ken Crane.
It's forcing me to confront, I think, my own hypocrisy. Like
uh-huh.
Like Like, I get how people are like, fuck it, I'm with Michael Jackson till the day I die. Or I'm right. not, R. Kelly bangs too hard and I'm not canceling him. Like, I can't do it. I'm like, I first off, I've defended him for years, not knowing any of the facts of the case. And, you know, all I knew was that they didn't press charges, so they must not have been able to find much. And I knew that that one other, that Moses kid was always saying none of this happened. So but as you're watching this new documentary, it gets harder and harder to defend him.
He's your Cosby.
He's my guy. I'm like, all right, I get it, I guess. You know, but it's like I can separate the art from the artist. Mm-hmm. When it's art that I like.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things where it's like what we do, like our art allows us to ascend our shitty selves that we live with every day. And you have a great set, or you have these great jokes, or you make a film, you make a beautiful film, a beautiful song or something that just kind of transcends who you are. The guy that has to take a shit a couple times a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's the humanity, like that's the thing that we struggle with, I guess, right?
Yes.
Because I really liked my favorite, this is gonna be like the recent, is like Match Point
was amazing.
That shit was fucking incredible. Yes. And like, but then you go back and look at all these movies, like it's 40 some year old dude with like a 17. It's just like, God damn. Like they really let him cook, man. They really let him cook on these. And just, it was a lot.
It was a lot of the same theme.
Yeah. It was fascinating. I mean, I remember Mos Def had a song, the artist formerly known as Mos Def had this song called Mr. Nigger, which was a riff off of Tribe Called Quest, that Tribe Called Quest Midnight Marauders record.
Right. That was on his first album, right?
Yeah, Black on Both Sides. Mm-hmm. And like he was like, he had that song. He's like, Woody and Soon Yi at the playoff game. And he was like, holding hands. And I was like, oh shit. You know, it's just like, and I remember my dad being in the car with me while that song was playing one day. And I was like, yeah, dad, you don't understand. Like my dad, you know, my dad was pretty with it. He's pretty with it, but he was just like, damn, this guy's really going in. But I think we all have to confront that at some point. It's just, it only fucks with you when it's somebody that you like.
Yes.
If you didn't care about R. Kelly or Bill Cosby, it would be like, fuck.
Cancel R. Kelly. He's a monster.
Yeah he's a monster.
But then it's like, Woody Allen, I'm like, well, hold on. Let's not.
I think as long as we, like, you know, as long as you recognize that, I think you're okay that you have to struggle. You have to struggle with that. And it's just like,
but it's also I feel like one of the things that nobody ever wants to talk about is how fucked up, damaged people make the best art. Like there's just, I don't want to steal her joke, but, Bonnie McFarlane, we talk about this all the time. And she always says, like, the only thing worse than art made by pedophiles is like art made by trust fund babies. And there's something to that. Like it's the fucked up broken people that are the most interesting.
Yeah. I like Bonnie. I mean, Bonnie was the very first headliner that I saw like really fucking work. Like you kind of see, like just really seeing her like work her craft. This had to be like, maybe 9 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago. I was doing a Soul Joel show in somewhere in Hoboken at this weird ass warehouse or some shit. And it was like, it was some weird show in this room. And it was like you could bring your own beer. And I think it was me, Dan Soder, and somebody else. Like we were all, and Bonnie closed it out. And I just watched her just like work that room, just like tear somebody's that was a little too, wasn't heckling, but was just kind of being a little too saucy.
Yeah.
She tore his head off and then like put it back on and then like told some jokes and like did went back into her material. That was like the first time, you know, like you really as a comic that was just like, oh, this is what it could be. This is what it looks like. You know,
yeah.
Always have that fond memory of her. And then she'd probably make fun of me. I'm not really close with her, but that's like one of my fondest moments of working with her.
Yes, I love
a woman, a female comic during Women's History Month. And I was not prompted to say that. It came out organically. But yeah, that is a thing, man. Like it's I think people, and then there's just like a lot of posturing on social media anyway. It is interesting to watch, though. That is it's crazy.
Watching, you know, that. It's funny. I tweeted out a joke about the Woody Allen. Yes. I tweeted out a Woody Allen joke. It's actually an old joke, but since the documentary came out, it's like relevant again. Mm-hmm. Bonnie actually texted me the night before it aired to say the Woody Allen documentary is airing tomorrow. You should retweet that joke.
Yeah.
And so I did. And the fucking joke went viral.
Do the joke. Tell the joke.
The joke is say what you will about Woody Allen, but he's been married to the same daughter for like 30 years. And that's got to count for something. And the joke fucking explodes. Like for 72 straight hours, I was just watching it climb like an odometer. And it was, I have to tell you, it was 90% people that didn't know I was joking and didn't realize that we shared the exact same opinion on Woody Allen. And I was just getting lectured. I was called a misogynist piece of shit. Like people were so mad about
you have comedian movie. In your bio, right?
And yes. Even though yeah. So it's Ken Kranz comic. Somebody retweeted it, something like with a quote tweet, like this is what white guys think is funny these days, or I can't tell if this white guy's joke. A lot of people are very quick to point out that you're white when you say something that they don't like.
Yeah.
And which is, I get it. Like maybe we should have been nicer on our way up.
Yeah,
I'm not even saying I totally disagree with it.
Yeah.
But and then somebody commented, I suspect he's joking, but I'm not invested enough to even investigate. And it's like the word comic you didn't have to investigate that much. You could have just read my name and you would have known I was my fucking
handle,
you know, my but also my profile pic is me on stage, you know.
Yeah, people are just looking to be outraged, and it's like you actually spend time and write your jokes, and I've worked with you a bunch of times, and you don't strike me as that comic. You could just be dark and not give a shit. I mean, sometimes you might host a show and start off darker than normal.
Yes.
And I'd just be sitting in the back laughing. But other than that, like, you know, it is what it is. Well, I want you to plug. Let's wrap this up because I know you got to go. Plug your show and tell us what your show is about. Has it started yet?
I have a new show. It just started. We are on Spotify and SoundCloud. How when do you release these?
This will go up probably Sunday of next week. Of this, so, you know, it'll go up in this weekend.
Right. So I'm sure by the time this goes up or shortly thereafter, we're going to be up on iTunes.
And what's the name of the show?
The name of the show is I Love Rock and Roll.
Okay.
And it's, do you know a comic out of Philly, Chip Chantry?
I don't know. I'm not sure, but I may know of him, but I'm not too sure if I do.
He's a really funny. There's so many good comics out of Philly. Mm-hmm. As a New York dude, my stance has always kind of been like fuck Philly, but I got to give it to their comics. They have a lot of really good comics that have come.
Oh out. Yeah, it's just I just haven't gotten a chance to perform down there. Like I've like opened for Hardwick at Helium. Mm-hmm. I've opened for JL there. But I think those are the only two times that I performed in Philly, and just everywhere else has been not like at a traditional club. They've been like one night.
Right.
Stuff. But yeah, right. I like Pennsylvania.
So it's just a podcast. If you're a music fan, mm-hmm. we're doing deep dives into some obscure artists, or we're taking really popular bands or stories or albums and just dissecting them.
Cool.
The first one we just did was about the life of Bobby Keys. He was an American sax player, and he was like a rock and roll Forrest Gump. Mm. He was thrown out of the Rolling Stones for partying too hard. Like he was a member wow. of the Stone. The Stones sat him down and were like, "You're a bad influence on Keith Richards." And but the dude wow, played that's with crazy. He grew up in the same town as Buddy Holly, so he began his musical life playing in backyard bands with Buddy Holly. He ended up he played with Buddy Holly, he played with Jimi Hendrix, Elvis, fucking he was in the Stones for 10 years. He played with all four of the Beatles on various albums, and it's like nobody's ever heard of you've definitely heard his music, like that mm-hmm. sax solo in Brown Sugar. Mm-hmm. And he's on so many songs that you've heard and know so well, but nobody knows who the guy is. So first one, we took a deep dive into that. This week, we're looking at the Beach Boys and their ties to Charles Manson. We have a De La Soul episode coming up, a Van Halen episode coming up.
Who's on the De La Soul episode? Is it Brian McGinnis?
Darren Patterson.
Oh shit! Yeah, I love Darren. I love. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I know
Darren. He's a good dude. You guys all know each other.
I was gonna say because I was gonna say like Darren knows music.
Yes,
I just know. So I was gonna mention him. Fuck it! I was gonna mention after we cut off. I was gonna say you could definitely have Darren Patterson on.
Yeah,
but I just know. McGinnis is obsessed. He loves De La Soul, he's also a big hip hop fan too. But I just know like, and then Darren used to work at Tower Records, so I'm sure he knows. Ask him about that. Know. Yeah, yeah,
that's good to know. Yeah, De La's my favorite rap act of all time.
Okay. All right.
Although we were just talking about Mos Def, and I saw Black Star open for the Beastie Boys.
Holy shit. What year?
The Meadowlands. And I don't know. It was whatever year that Black Star album was at. And the next day,
98. Yeah,
that sounds right. Mm-hmm. The next day, I was at the record store buying that Black Star album.
That was the first. That was my, other than A Tribe Called Quest. That was my freshman year of college, and that Black Star album just kind of like opened the floodgates. Like Mos Def is Yasiin Bey now is like one of my all time favorite. He's in my top five, but I got to see him live in 2003, and Maceo was his DJ in Chicago. Wow. Yeah, Maceo DJed for him at the Abbey. No, at this club called Metro, which is right across the street from literally across the street from Wrigley Field. And that was when the 03, when they made the playoffs, that fucking Bartman catch, mm-hmm. that shit, like that was like around that time. And everybody was like, the Cubs are gone. They got they were going to play in Florida. And I was like, I'm going to see Mos Def. You know,
did you ever hear have you ever heard of the band Blackjack Johnson?
Of course I have, dude.
Well, did they weren't like they weren't a popular Do I have the name right?
That was his tour.
I'm talking about the Hard Rock Band with Mos Def as the front man.
That was his.
Side project.
They did an album. They did that. That was essentially the second album that came out.
His second album.
The New Danger.
Yes. The band was Mos Def was the front man. Steve Jordan on drums. He's an amazing drummer. Plays with Keith Richards all the time when Keith Richards would go and do his own thing. Bernie Worrell from Parliament Funkadelic on the organ, like on the keyboards, and who's one of the greatest of all time. I forget who was on guitar and bass. I saw them at Hammerstein Ballroom tiny little club, and watching Mos Def, you were like, I'm not calling him by his new name out of anything other than I just can't ever remember it. It's not like a play thing where I'm like, he's Mos Def and needs to be. I just can never remember his new name.
That would be like if you just called him Dante. No, I understand, because sometimes I say it too, but like, yeah, dude, like, see, I envy you of getting to see all. Well, New York, I mean, I was in Chicago like in my early 20s, so I got to see a lot. We got to wrap this up, but you got to have me on
absolutely, for sure.
We'll talk St. Vincent like you want me to, because I can tell you some stories, not anything crazy, but I've seen her a bunch of times.
Oh, have you? I'm dying. She's on my bucket. She's very high up on my list of bands that I haven't seen yet.
She's fucking incredible, dude. We can talk about that. You just let me know. And so you got the I Love Rock and Roll is the podcast that just got released.
It's on Spotify. We have Chip made up a Twitter handle.
Okay.
Rock and Roll with the and spelled out pod, just at Rock and Roll Pod.
Mm-hmm. And I'll put it all in the show notes.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And it's completely different from Why Bother. You know, these are just going to be like evergreen, you know, musical stories. It's not going to be me shitting on the guest for an hour straight.
Music's always fun to talk about. So that's going to be a good one.
And there's so many comics. I feel like comics are just frustrated musicians, and so many musicians are just frustrated comics. Like, it's such an incestuous relationship to begin with.
Yeah.
That, I'm excited. I can't wait to have you on. And I'm especially for St. Vincent. I'm in love with her, and I don't know anything about her other than, you know, I just love her music.
She's amazing. We'll talk about her. All right, brother Ken. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, man. We'll thanks so much for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Take it easy.